if you're going to be serious about making progress, you got to look at the numbers. And so the other reason I would say that I encourage vegans to overshoot protein consumption to get more in that 1.2 or even slightly higher range is amino acids like leucine. That amino acid in particular signals the beginning of the protein synthesis process. And if you don't have enough of that amino acid, which of course you can get from plant-based sources, but if you're eating more whole food plant-based type stuff, it's going to lack in that a little bit. And then if you've got the fiber factor and you're using some amino acid absorption to begin with, it's just better to overshoot. And so like for me, I always try to eat 30 grams of protein a meal because you're usually going to get about at least 3 grams of leucine out of 30 grams of protein. And then you don't have to worry about having enough leucine. I know not everybody, especially smaller bodied people, are not going to want to eat 30 grams every meal. So it's really a matter of figuring out, based on your lean mass and your body weight, how much protein you need to eat per day. And then you should probably divide up for the amount of meals you think you can realistically stomach to eat and hit that protein target.
He's a best-selling author, award-winning filmmaker, inspirational speaker, certified nutrition coach, plant-powered athlete, and host of the number one holistic health podcast in the world, Nathan Crane.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome to the podcast. I'm Nathan Crane. I'm excited that you're joining me for this inspiring conversation today. And before we dive in, I want to give you a free 5-day challenge I've put together to help you get fit, healthy, and feeling great. It's a plant-powered athlete 5-day challenge to help you incorporate more healthy plant-powered nutrition into your diet to help you improve your performance in and out of the gym. You can get the recipes, guidebook, and all the details for free over at plantpoweredathlete.com. If you're ready to take your performance to the next level, head over to plantpoweredathlete.com. Sign up today for your free 5-day Plant Powered Athlete Challenge. All right, let's get into this episode. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm excited to have Daniel Austin here with us. Daniel is a power lifter. He's a punk rocker, and he's a longtime vegan. And usually those three things aren't commonly understood to go together, yet he has been thriving as a vegan since 2005, a musician and a super strong power lifter. And excited to get into everything from your diet to, you know, what got you into veganism, you know, what are some pitfalls people should look out for, you know, have you been able to develop the strength that you have, you know, what are some things that athletes can think about in terms of plant-based nutrition and helping them perform better and add more strength to their lifts, and a whole bunch of other stuff. You got a good book out there as well, so we'll talk about that. So, Daniel, hey, man, thanks for coming on the podcast. Great to meet you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me.
So I was checking out some of your lifts lately on Instagram. I saw you did what looked like you were doing deadlift. You're getting ready for a meet coming up. I saw deadlifts. So you did 475 for a triple. Looked like 410 back squat for a double or triple as well. Yep. The bench was 280 by what? Also a triple maybe?
Yeah. I compete in 75 kg weight class. I'm a pretty light guy. I'm 165 pounds. I've got currently all Texas state records for the 40 plus guys in my weight class, drug tested. And I'm, you know, strength progress is not linear, like all progress. I've been this strong before. I'm kind of trying to get back to where I was and then exceed where I was. And I think I'll do it this year. It's, you know, I'm 41 now and I feel more aches in the joints. I've been powerlifting 10 years straight, you know, so I do feel it's taking a toll. I should probably take a break for a year or something, but I just like to do it.
Yeah.
I can't stop.
Yeah.
It's all about pain management.
Yeah. I hear you on that. So you got the Texas state records. It was pretty amazing for 40 plus, and you didn't even start powerlifting, until like 10 years ago, right?
Right. I was 32, my first competition. And That's what I always say. One of my biggest regrets is, you brought up the fact that I'm a musician. I got into punk rock and stuff as a teenager, and I played sports as a kid. But as soon as I got a guitar and got into playing music, I dropped all that. And so I missed all those developmental years of being a teenager and going through puberty. And if I had been active as an athlete, then I could have probably had more foundational strength and muscle development. But so my biggest regret is not being a jock when I was in high school.
I totally understand. People don't get it unless you started lifting later in life, whether it's in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
It's not the same. It takes longer. It's much harder. You recover slower. Like, that's why nutrition is so, so important. Nutrition, sleep, recovery, all that stuff, right? I didn't start lifting until I was 30. You know, I started CrossFit when I was 30, and I started from nothing. I mean, I had a 0-pound deadlift. I'd never deadlifted before in my life at 30 years old. And so to build the strength that you have, you know, in that amount of time is pretty amazing. What's your best lifts?
Best deadlift to date is 535. Nice. Best bench is 325. And best squat was actually, it was only one of my best lifts that was in competition. It was 469. I did all those, not, the bench and the deadlift were just in the gym. So I weighed over what my competition weight was on that day. I was probably in the lower 170s. And then the time I squatted 469 with the plant belt team up at Mr. America was, it was a 2-hour weigh-in, a USAPL meet. So I didn't try to cut weight to make the 165. So I weighed 175 that day, but almost 470 pounds.
Yeah, those numbers are solid. Those are huge numbers, especially being a $165, $170. And people think you can't get strong on a plant-based or on a vegan diet. You and I and many others out there have obviously proven that completely wrong. We know that you can get strong, and many people even claim that when they switch to a plant-based diet, even high-level athletes that I've been documenting and writing about who switch, you know, in their late 30s when most people are at the tail end of their career, you know, these are professional athletes in all kinds of sports. Novak Djokovic, there's basketball players, football players, there's strength athletes who switch to a plant-based diet, and then they claim they're actually recovering better. It extends their career. They say they have more energy. They're getting stronger when they felt like they were heading downward towards the tail end. And then they, boom, switch, and they get this upward trajectory for a few years. So obviously those stereotypes are false. But you got to know what you're doing also. You got to know what to eat,
exactly.
Right? That's a big thing. So. Yeah. This podcast is brought to you by Econugenics, the makers of Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin. Pectisol is clinically proven and backed by over 80 studies, 6 patents, and 30-plus years of clinical success. We're all familiar with inflammation and chronic diseases like cancer, but have you ever wondered where these health issues actually come from? You need to read more about an inflammatory protein called galectin-3. It's been called by thousands of practitioners and research papers one of the root causes of nearly every chronic illness. Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin is the most researched galectin-3 blocker on the market. It's been recommended by thousands of doctors for over 30 years to support oncology, immune health, and gentle detoxification. I personally use Pectisol, and I highly recommend it. Start your journey toward a healthier you with Pectisol Modified Citrus Pectin, and Econugenics is offering our listeners 15% off at econugenics.link/ncrane15. You'll be able to use ncrane15 as a discount code to get 15% off your order. Again, that's econugenics.link/ncrane15. Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollock, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollack, go to drpollack.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com/intro to cancer. Hey, so if you've been following me for any time now, you know that I often talk about Helin 951, the nitrogen fermented organic soy drink. I first learned about it at an integrative cancer event years ago, and I've been taking this myself for a long time. It's so potent and it has a strong flavor, so I add their organic mint powder to it, and it's easy to take any time of day. I usually take it in the mornings. You know, I'm constantly looking into natural health products, and the ones that catch my eye are the ones with years of proven results and the science and research to back them up. I love that Helin 951 checks all of these boxes. Made from a unique 100% organic soybean grown in the high mountains of Mongolia, Helin 951 has some incredible health properties. Just a few of the benefits are more energy, better sleep, detox, longevity, better immune function, and some fantastic anti-cancer compounds. The folks over at Helin have made a page just for our followers to learn more. You can head over to helin951.com/crane. That's HELAN951.com/crane. They have special discounted packages there for you to get you started. And if you use the promo code CRANE, C-R-A-N-E, at checkout, they will also give you free shipping. So head over and grab this special offer for yourself and use the free shipping promo code CRANE, or just give them a call if that's easier for you. They are so easy to work with and have over 32 years in the industry. Again, that's helin951.com/crane. You know, with the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I use Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order 4 products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljanski.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljanski.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off.
Well, it also, you got to be specific to your goals. That defines how you should eat. For example, you mentioned some athletes there who aren't strongmen or powerlifters or bodybuilders. They're more endurance oriented. And I do think that switching to plant-based vegan diets, if you are more endurance oriented, your protein is less important, and getting that extra fiber and those extra antioxidants and all that, it kind of lends itself more naturally, like a more natural kind of whole food plant-based diet, to being more successful at endurance-oriented sports or cross-training, things like that. Whereas the more you take the cardiovascular training out of it and you're just focusing on muscle, you got to do kind of what people think is crazy, unnatural, unhealthy kind of high-protein diets, which is going to involve some supplementation and processed foods to get the calorie and protein goals, which is, you know, what my book focuses on, The Way of the Vegan Meathead. And so I would always tell people, you know, if you're going for strength specifically, and you're not doing a lot of cardio type training, focus on your macro goals to make sure you meet that, which is going to feel unnatural. It's going to feel weird. And it's, It's not, I think, what any of the prominent doctors in the plant-based movement would advise anyone to do. But I find from my friends in powerlifting, from learning about Patrick Baboumian's diet that he posts on YouTube, I mean, strongman and powerlifting diets are just not typical health diets. But it can at least be equal to, in terms of the performance results, in terms of building muscle and building strength. And I do think there are still health benefits because you're not eating dietary cholesterol and you're eating less saturated fat, more likely. And, you know, at 41, I got very solid blood work, very solid blood pressure is very healthy. Whereas you look at those guys who are approaching 40 on a strongman diet and, you know, they eat meat and they eat eggs and bacon and all that. They're saying, yeah, our nutritionist told us we gotta win and get out of this sport so we don't die by 45, you know? Yeah, so one thing I tell people is strength doesn't equal health, and we need to be mindful of that. I think even as vegans.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think there's a balance there, right? I think you can do it both ways. I've certainly been experimenting the last 6 years of, you know, building strength on a whole food plant-based diet, or let's say whole food vegan diet. I do honey. So, you know, sure, hardcore vegans wouldn't count honey as, but I actually count honey as vegan because it's the bees literally go to the flower, eat the nectar, which is like the most amazing thing you can think about, and then spit, you know, convert it in their bodies and then spit out honey, which is like this golden, amazing, you know, nutritionally fulfilling, you know, food product. And I've actually used to have a wild beehive that I would harvest honey from, and they, you know, didn't even sting me. It's like they allowed me to do it as long as I didn't take too much. So, you know, my experiences with, like, yeah, like the way that everything commercially raised today, from honey to chickens to, you know, beef and everything, is very destructive. But if we're living closer in harmony with nature and with the animals, things start, you know, using permaculture principles and regenerative agriculture and things like that, it starts to shift more towards a harmonious relationship with these animals. So anyway, that's my take on yeah, honey. But point being is, I've been doing it primarily as whole foods, plant-based, you know, as a, because I came into this through the health aspect, through the health research and through cancer research and helping cancer patients. And then I applied that same information to myself as an athlete, and have gotten amazing results, you know, in yeah, 6 years, you know, in my late
20s. I think the crux of it for people is just knowing how to do it, how to get off the board, how to build a plant-based vegan diet specific to your goals, which for a lot of people, that means you have to ask them, well, what is your goal? I mean, do you want to be jacked? Do you want to be vascular and lean? Or do you want to be able to run a marathon? Do you want to be able to deadlift 500 pounds? Like, those are all different diets.
What do you prescribe to in terms of like protein? Are you doing about a gram per pound of body weight, or what do you do?
I do more than that because, well, you got to see, really, you got to experiment and see what your body responds to. For me, I think, I don't know, I'm not going to say I was like a low responder to just eating a basic vegan diet, not worrying that much about protein, because I also didn't know a lot about proper training at the time. I was trying to, because, you know, training correctly also is going to shut down your ability to grow or to be able to recover and grow, you know. So, I mean, there's so many factors, but in terms of protein, for a strength athlete, I advise for vegans, you got to overshoot. It's better to get too much, especially since there's no research showing there's any risk of like kidney damage from consuming high amounts of plant-based protein. You know, if we start to see studies that are showing that plant-based protein poses a threat to your kidneys, I would change my tune. But, 19 years vegan right now, and about 10 years eating the very diet that I talk about in my book, I've got, you know, healthy kidney function. You always got elevated blood urea nitrate or whatever from having more muscle and more protein, since protein waste, you know, those are standard things for athletic people and in unless you were a sedentary person and had high levels of that, there's nothing to worry about there. But I would say there's a couple factors in why I advise vegans to eat more than 1 gram, if you're pursuing strength like I am, to eat more than 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight per day. And that's because, one, fiber is a factor. You're eating more fiber on a plant-based diet. Fiber is great for your gut health, your colorectal health, and all that, and it's a lifesaver in so many ways. But if you're eating 3,000 plus calories a day, that means you're getting even more fiber, and that can reduce the bioavailability of the amino acids in the proteins you're eating, which means, you know, like we're just flushing things out of our system faster than omnivores much of the time, unless they're omnivores who eat sufficient amount of fiber, which in America, we know that that's not most people. So anyway, you got to overshoot for that, accounting for the bioavailability factor versus your fiber intake. There is, I think, such a thing as eating too much fiber. And you'll know this if you go to the bathroom 7 times a day when you start eating that strength training diet, you know, which is what happened to me. And I had to start to find ways to mitigate the effects of probably eating too much fiber with my high calorie, high protein diet. And that was by then trying to find the balance between fat consumption, fat calories, and carbohydrates and protein, and to a way that I could get it manageable per day. You know, yeah, to me, if you're going to the bathroom to take a number two to keep it clean, 4 times a day, that should be like probably your upper limit.
Yeah. I mean, the other extreme of that is I know people who, you know, poop once every other day, and that's horrible for your health.
As
you're
vegans?
Not pooping as I don't know about as vegans. Actually, I don't know if I've met any vegans that told me that. The people who've told me that are almost always omnivores. I'm not saying it can't happen to vegans. I'm sure it can.
Right.
But the ones who I know who've told me, and they're like, yeah, I poop every other day. I'm like, what? Like, that's insane. Like, minimum should be twice a day, meaning you are flushing your GI tract. At least I go, you know, every morning, every night. And once in a while, there might be a third time during the day, especially when I'm on like a bulking diet, you know. And if the more you're eating, the more you should be pooping as well. Otherwise, it's, you know, just building up inside of you. But yeah, 4 times or more a day, that, you know, that might be signs that there's, you know, something else going on as well.
There's
going
to be nutrient loss associated with that. It's just too much. Yeah. So that's one factor of why I would say you got to be careful to eat. I would say as a vegan, more protein.
What is your, what do you aim for in terms of grams per pound?
Well, you know, if I'm weighing 170, which is actually what I weigh this morning, I'm aiming for roughly 200 to 210, but on some days.
You're doing like 1.2, 1.3. Is that what that math is?
Yeah. In my book, I say as a vegan meathead, you should aim for 1.25 to 1.5. And that's going to be hard for some people. So, you know, to me, if you get over 1.2, you're doing pretty good. And the interesting thing is there are people on my team. I don't know if you're familiar with the Vegan Strong Plant Belt team. Like our team captain is Ryan Stills, who's a 5-time IPF world champion powerlifter. He'd be another guy who'd be very interesting to talk to. He's one of the best powerlifters of all time. And he's a captain of our team. And you know, he's a big guy. He weighs 100 pounds more than me. He's like, he competes at like 265.
He's vegan too, huh?
Yeah. He's 48, 49. So, you know, he's a bit older than everyone on the team. But he's been lifting for like 30 years or more. And he went vegan about 5 years ago or so. So a couple of his titles he's done as a vegan. All his other previous titles were just, you know, as an omnivore before he got into vegan consciousness or whatever. But, you know, I was surprised for as big a guy as he is, he's only eating about 0.8 of his body weight.
That's about what I do on average, yeah.
Yeah.
I do maybe. I was doing too little. Because I was like, I think I'm fine. But I realized once I had started bumping up to like 0.7 to 1.0, which is where all the research is in terms of protein muscle synthesis. Now, a lot of that, now the research is there is research on, you know, protein from meat and protein from plants. And they don't show on both of those, from what I've seen, they don't show a lot of additional benefit once you go above, you know, 1.0 or 1.2. There's not much benefit, right? That protein, that excess protein mostly gets converted into back into glucose through the liver. I mean, it's
right.
Gluconeogenesis, I believe, is what that process is, right? So, which is extra energy taken from the body that you could have just gotten by eating carbohydrates. But what you're saying is, you know, because the extra fiber, you may be losing out on some of those amino acids, you know, through your stool potentially, which is why you encourage higher levels. I've got a buddy, and again, that's why you said it's individual. You got to kind of figure out what works for you.
Yeah.
I've got a buddy who does like less than half a gram. Now, he's not a big strength athlete, but he's shredded, he's ripped, he stays super lean.
You
know, he's CrossFitter, and he doesn't have any problem putting on muscle, but he's also not like as a big strength athlete. So again, strength and muscle, you know, hypertrophy, for example, if you're trying to grow muscle, either as a bodybuilder, power lifter, Olympic weightlifter, obviously the research is clear, you know, you get to that 0.8 to 1.2 or 0.7 to 1.2 is like that sweet spot.
Right. And I would say, you know, when I was trying, because look, I weighed about 135 to 140 pounds as a 18, 19 year old, 20 year old vegetarian. I was vegetarian at that time. When I, in my late 20s, decided I wanted to grow and be stronger as a vegan, I had to get real about how much protein I was eating, because before it was all intuitive. I had no idea and I wasn't training. And for me, I didn't start to grow until I really overshot. And so that's why, you know, my book, The Way of the Vegan Meathead, is the way of what I've done. And I encourage people to experiment, because it's just a blueprint for how I got over the hump and learned how to get into that growth zone through training and diet. Whereas, you know, because I was just a scrawny, stereotypical vegetarian, vegan, you know. And when I went vegan, I lost about 5 pounds. I looked about the same, but I got a little more skinny fat. And it's because I wasn't eating as much calories, really, because back in, 2005, you know, there was tofurkey sausage and stuff. But a lot of times I would just go out and get pizza with vegetables, no cheese. And so you're taking all those protein and fat calories off the pizza, and you're just eating straight carbohydrates.
Right.
And it's half the amount of calories as would if you had the cheese on it. So I started losing weight. I started losing muscle mass, but I was a touring musician back then. It actually helped my respiratory system, and I ceased to get sinus infections and things like that. But in terms of carrying muscle, I got smaller.
And I read that comment later. A lot. I read that comment a lot from like ex-vegans who are like, oh, I tried vegan, but it didn't work because I lost so much weight, I couldn't keep on weight. And usually if you start asking these questions, just like you shared, it's almost always exactly the same reason. Like they're just eating on the healthy side. They're just eating salads all day, right?
Yeah.
Salads.
They're eating too light.
I mean, it's thermogenesis. I mean, it's a law. Calories in, calories out, with some minute percentage of fluctuation based
hormonal,
on
hormonal, individual, genetic.
But at the end of the day, it's almost precisely calories in, calories out on any diet. I don't care if it's a Twinkie diet, if it's a vegan diet, if it's a carnivore diet. Calories in, calories out, pretty closely with percentage is about what's gonna. Right. So it wasn't the vegan diet; it was the calories. Yeah.
I see it all the time. I, on occasion, I'll privately coach people in powerlifting if they approach me. And I find a lot of vegans will go get a general trainer or even a general powerlifting coach, and then they tell them they're vegan, and these people get very discouraging. And so I've trained a handful of people over the last 5 or 6 years. And whenever things are stalling out for them, I'm like, well, how much protein are you eating? Because here's the thing. A lot of people will get my book, but they don't read it. So I was just like, well, yeah, I know you've got it, so you better read it. And then they start upping the protein and they go, oh, okay, now the weight's moving. Now I'm growing, you know, and it's just a fact. I always say, hey, it's a numbers game. You know, if something's failing in your training, well, we can look at your programming and the periodization of all that. But we also need to look at the numbers of what you're eating. Are you eating enough calories to support the output, the energy output that you're placing on your body? And are you eating enough protein to support recovery and growth? And most people aren't. And most people think it's just a casual thing you can do. But if you're going to be serious about making progress, you've got to look at the numbers. And so the other reason I would say that I encourage vegans to overshoot protein consumption to get more in that 1.2 or even slightly higher range is amino acids like leucine, which are this, that amino acid in particular signals the beginning of the protein synthesis process. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have enough of that amino acid, which of course you can get from plant-based sources, but if you're eating more whole food plant-based type stuff, it's gonna lack in that a little bit. And then if you've got the fiber factor and you're losing some amino acid absorption to begin with, it's just better to overshoot. And so like for me, I always try to eat 30 grams of protein a meal because you're usually gonna get about at least 3 grams of leucine out of 30 grams of protein. And then you don't have to worry about having enough leucine. I know not everybody, especially smaller bodied people, are not going to want to eat 30 grams every meal. So it's really a matter of figuring out, based on your lean mass and your body weight, how much protein you need to eat per day. And then you should probably divide up per the amount of meals you think you can realistically stomach to eat.
Yeah.
And hit that protein target. And the cool thing about all this amino acid absorption science is we're finding out that the window of time that you have to utilize all the things you consume seems to be bigger than we ever thought.
Right.
So, you know, you could be, you know, they're saying optimal is within 4 hours getting all those amino acids ingested. But now some people are saying it could even be as much as a day.
Yeah. So, I mean, it used to be, you have to get in that protein within 30 minutes to an hour after your workout. Yeah. And now they're like, no.
And I used to do that
3 hours, 4 hours. And in fact, even plant-based protein in general, protein from plants, whether it's in a, it's in a powder or you're eating, actually breaks down even slower throughout the body. So it's like, and they're showing that, you could, as long as you get it within even up to 4 hours, they don't see much difference at all.
Right. Yeah. I'm old school. So I try to, when I started training for real, it was probably about 2011, and I wasn't trying to be a powerlifter. I had Robert Cheek's book, Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness. And I was just doing the programs out of his book, 'cause he's the first vegan bodybuilder I met. And, I was doing the thing, just walk out of the gym with a shake and a bar right away, like as soon as I finished. But then, these days it's just, I let myself get home, make a smoothie, that kind of thing. And I don't rush it as much.
What is your kind of macro percentages look like? And what's your kind of calorie intake look like personally?
What I'm finding for me over time is that, these days maintenance calories is about 2,600. I can diet at 2,000 to 2,200, depending on how hard I want to diet. If I want to lose about a pound a week, I'll probably do 2,100 calories, something like that. And then if I want to bulk, I eat more in the 3,000 range, maybe 3,200. So there's a differential of about 600 calories between the levels of weight loss, maintenance, and bulking for me. And again, I'm about 170 pounds. And I'm about probably 13 to 15% body fat, depending on what kind of reading I get. The macro breakdown of that would be, I always try to eat at least 30% of my total calories from protein. As a strength athlete in coming up with this whole vegan meathead thing, like in my book, I was basing it on the world's strongest men like Eddie Hall and Brian Shaw and Hafþór Bjornsson. And these guys, their nutrition coaches are saying they're not looking out for them in any kind of health oriented way. It's just, you know,
yeah, if you watch what they eat, man, but they have to. Yeah. 400 pounds.
I mean, these guys weigh, they weigh over 400 pounds. But I'm looking at the ratios, right? I mean, they strive to eat over about 30% fat, 30% protein, and the rest would be carbohydrates. So it's usually for me under 50% carbohydrates, and I've broken it down certain variations of my diet in my book to be as low as about 25%. I would say I'm a moderate carbohydrate guy overall and a high protein guy. And as a vegan, I eat more fat than people would expect. And I think the benefits of eating more fat is, you know, the sex hormone recovery benefits, you know, that's been my experience thus far with it. You know, because
Have you tested your hormones, your SPGH, testosterone, all this stuff? Like,
Times, everything.
Like, experimented with more fat or less fat to see how it impacts you?
I haven't drastically changed my diet to see how much it affects specifically like testosterone, because the testosterone's always been a healthy middle range. Like, I don't have, I'm not like an outlier with the 900. Level total testosterone. I'm usually more 500 to 600 range, but it's always kind of been that way since I started testing in my 30s. After doing this for a number of years, and that's usually where I'm sitting right now. And the SHBG has always been in the middle. Estradiol has always been like normal healthy range, because you don't, as a guy, you don't actually want your estrogen to be too low,
right?
You want to have a healthy amount of that.
Some people think, like, you know, not just young people, a lot of men think that, I want to get my testosterone super super high, right? I want to get 1200 mm-hmm. plus, and then I'll be more, you know, I'll have more strength, I'll have more energy, I'll have more of that. The problem is with any of our hormones, if they go too far in any extreme, too far high, too far low, then you start having metabolic dysfunction. So it's not all about, you know, we kind of think, you know, I know a lot of younger athletes think this. I've even thought this, like, I got to get my testosterone, you know, way up there, way above to the high numbers. And that, number one, may not benefit you much at all. You know, if you're extreme, and in fact, if you're extremely high, it may throw off other hormones. It may cause other metabolic problems. So it's like, as long as you're in that healthy range, which is a pretty wide range, you know, it's like,
It's a very wide range. And again, it's all relative. I've got a friend who's getting into weightlifting, and I think he's probably in his early 30s, but he's actually, you know, higher than most of us. He was like 750 when he first got it, you know, and I don't know. I would be interested if I could go back to my 20s and get my readings, but in my 30s, I've never been that high. But he actually feels like crap and has a lot of joint pains, and like, he doesn't feel like he's training right or eating right. And it's really relative. You could have a high number and feel like garbage, whereas I'm more in the middle range, 550, maybe on a good month, 600 when I go, and I make progress. I feel fine. I've actually, this is my 10th straight year competing in powerlifting, and I've never had an injury that was severe enough to keep me out of a competition that I had planned.
Wow.
I've always shown up and that's done, you know. Yeah. And so as a training smart's big, eating, sleeping, all those things, all your lifestyle factors are big. And, you know, I was, before I moved here to Virginia just a few weeks ago, I went to a strongman gym for a few years in Central Texas. And, you know, I'm like the only vegan in the gym, and it's a strongman gym, so almost everybody's on, at the very least, testosterone replacement therapy. But a lot of these older, big, strong guys are telling me, the ones that are just doing it for replacement, just for general health, they're telling me their doctor's just trying to get them to like 450 because that's where they start to feel normal. Mm. You know, and she goes, and these are guys that look jacked, you know? You would think that they're more like 1200 or maybe like bodybuilding Olympia 2000, just completely artificial, but no, they're like, no, man, I'm like less than 500. So they were impressed that I eat tofu every day and was over 500.
Yeah, I know. It's so funny. Well, and that's, you know, I don't know those guys in your gym, but little that I know about like PEDs and steroids and stuff, if they were using them earlier in their life,
yes,
and then they stop using them, it does cause your body to you know, reduce, slow down, and mess up your natural.
I do know some people production. Like that. They just got on it too early because they wanted an artificially high number, and it caused them lifelong. I don't want to say problems because they're managing it and they look fine, but they have to get things prescribed to level them out. And you know, I have other friends who've just kind of had the hereditary issue of low testosterone. And when they go get treated, the doctor's just trying to get them above 350 to 400. And then it changes their life. They feel totally different. So people obsess over having a high number. And it just goes to show, like we're saying, it's relative to your genetics and just your personal experience that you could get a lot done with a relatively low healthy number in terms of your testosterone readings. And then there's a lot of other things you should focus on.
Yeah, I did on the testosterone. So a couple years ago I tested and total testosterone was 711. But my free testosterone was a little bit low. It was like 8.5. And then my SHBG was high. So it's like I had high testosterone, but my body wasn't benefiting, or let's say 711 is kind of, you know, higher healthy.
Yeah. Well, I think
it wasn't benefiting as much from that number. It increased later to 832, and then my free testosterone went up into a healthy range closer to 10. And then I tested again last month and it's almost 900, and my free testosterone went up as well, 10.3, but my SHBG didn't go down. But what the reason I'm sharing that is it's gone up the last couple of years. You know, I've been primarily vegan for 13, 14 years as well. And I eat tofu and soy almost every single day. Right. The stereotype, the misconception is, oh, soy is going to tank your testosterone. It's going to increase your estrogen. And I've never seen that. And the studies don't show that. And no other person I've ever talked to that actually happens. So we know that doesn't actually happen to the general population.
Right.
But what I think increased my testosterone from 700 to 900 was I was doing four ice baths a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, in the morning before I worked out. And so that was the biggest difference I did for like 6 or 7 months. Then I retested him. And the reason I did that is because I saw this small Japanese study where they saw that if you did cold exposure before working out, they saw testosterone increase in men. And then I saw a case study where a doctor did the same thing and he did ice baths before he worked out in the morning and then saw his testosterone shoot way up. And so I did the same thing and then my testosterone went up. So it's kind of interesting that I saw that same thing.
And how did you feel in training?
Amazing. I mean, it's so much more energy. Like I'm generally, I love mornings, but it's always taken me, you know, ever since I was a little kid, it's always taken me to, like, I've always thrived in the afternoons and evenings and nights. And so I've always been more like slow in the mornings, but when I do the ice bath in the morning, I'm wide awake. You get that adrenaline dump, get that norepinephrine.
Right.
It's like you got clarity of mind. I go into the gym and I've just got way more energy, especially if I'm doing strength in the morning. It's better than it's better than four shots of espresso. So more energy, more clarity, training was better. And then, you know, like I said, I can't 100% prove my increase in testosterone was from that. I've never taken exogenous testosterone. I've never done TRT. I've never even taken DHEA, which is like you can get as a synthetic hormone that people take. I've never even taken that, you know? So like that was really the biggest change that I made. And, And yeah, it's hard. Every morning getting in that freaking ice bath is hard. That's why I did 4 days a week instead of 7 days a week, because it was like, I just wanted to be able to do it. But yeah, I feel amazing afterwards. And yeah, my testosterone went up like almost 200 points, which is pretty incredible.
That's really good. I was just curious if you actually felt good at a ratio that's comparable to how much it went up. Cause like I said, I know people,
I hit all
readings that don't feel good. So
during that 6 months, I hit all PRs and everything that I was working on, which I was actually working on 11, cause I do CrossFit primarily. And so I do Olympic weightlifting, powerlifting, plus all the endurance stuff and gymnastics. So all my gymnastics PRs went up, all my powerlifting lifts went up, all my Olympic weightlifting lifts went up. Everything went up during that 6 months, more than they had previously in like a year and a half span. My numbers went up in like it was about an 8 month training block that I was on. I also overtrained and trained through, two small things, but I should have backed off for a week and let them heal. And then train through them heavily for like 2 or 3 months. Not smart training, as you said, it was dumb training. And then caused.
Yeah, I mean, I've made these mistakes too, I mean, if you love to do it, you're going to make mistakes like that.
Yeah, that's the problem when you love something so much. Yeah. It's like, you just push yourself through it, even through that's the problem with the David Goggins mentality. Everybody out there who's following David Goggins, it's like, some people need a kick in the ass to get them going, and other people need a leash to like pull them back a little bit and be like, hey, chill out. Yeah. And you got to know which one you are. Like, I don't need that extra kick in the ass. I need to pull back, when otherwise I push too hard and then you end up with injuries and problems like
that. Yeah, I've got a recent anecdotal experience with that. Last year I went to Nationals in Las Vegas, USPA, Drug Tested National Championships. And I did, I put up my best DOT score that I'd ever done. I tied at 40 years old, I tied the most amount of weight I'd ever done at that body weight.
That's awesome.
And then I had, that was July. And then in October, so only, it was like mid-July. So it was really like less than 3 months later, I had another meet with my team at Mr. America in New Jersey. And my hips were just shot. Like, my groin and my hips were giving me so much pain from just the really, I kept trying to train heavy to not lose the neural adaptation of lifting the heavy weight so that I'd be meet ready in only about 2 months, which is not really enough time as an older advanced lifter to develop any more strength. And I was in so much pain, I started doing ice baths. And it helped manage the pain and get me through that meet. And I did pretty poorly at that meet. Like, I mean, granted, I won my weight class, I won the master's class, but my personal score went down from the summer pretty significantly. And I was pretty bummed about that, but it was great. The team, we all cleaned up, vegan team of powerlifters. We all placed, even Ryan Stills, our team captain, he won best lifter of the whole meet.
Wow. This was Vegas Nationals.
I did Nationals in Vegas, and then I had a sports festival with the Plant Built team in October.
Gotcha.
And I was at top of my game in July, and by October I was just fried.
That's how it goes sometimes. Yep.
Yeah. And so after that, I told myself, "Well, I'm not competing again until April." So that's 6 months. So I spent 3 months of only doing power building hypertrophy work. Mm-hmm. And I hadn't done that in years. And man, it felt so good just to like keep my squats at a relatively low intensity, but high reps. It just got the blood flow back where I needed us, And I tested one rep maxes. When was that? Probably around New Year's-ish. I can't remember. It was within the last month and a half. My strength was better than I was in October, and it was almost as good as it was in July. So, I've still got a couple months to go to my meet. But since I was training smartly and backing off the intensity, especially at my age and how long I've been doing the same thing, It just made a world of difference in feeling better. And sometimes less is more, you know? It just depends on where you're at. You know, that's why I always tell people they need to learn about periodization and training. So you just can't go heavy all the time. You're going to get injured.
Yep. Well, and that's, you know, one of the major benefits of hypertrophy work in powerlifting or Olympic weightlifting. You call it accessory work. You know, other people know it as just, you know, bodybuilding. It's, you know, three, four, five, six sets, you know, anywhere from 5, 6 to 30 reps, right? And it's just the benefit of doing that, even adding into regular training, even if you're doing 3 sets per muscle group per day, alternating and resting muscle groups, you are helping strengthen and add longevity towards the connective tissues, right? The tendons, the ligaments, the things that tend to, you know, end up getting inflamed and tear, you know, that is where you get so much benefit. Aside from, you know, muscle endurance, muscle hypertrophy, muscle strength, you get all that extra benefit from, you know, supporting the connective tissues. And I found that as well. That's what I'm doing right now, is just like a part of my healing protocol. It's like I'm doing lots of PT, obviously physical therapy, but I'm doing lots of bodybuilding and just, you know, hitting, you know, and giving lots of rest between, because I was training 5 hours a day, two sessions a day,
good God, man.
4 to 5 days. Yeah. 2.5 hours in the morning, 2.5 hours in the evening. And, you know, that's, and it's a big mix and it's a tremendous amount of volume. And it's like, you know, and if you don't back off when you need to, you know, like I now know I need bigger deload weeks than what I was taking. I was following the prescribed deloads, but those deloads were still 3 and 4 hour training days. And they were like twice as much volume than most people train regularly if they're just, you know, trying to stay strong and healthy. And it's like, I need full deload weeks where I'm backing off, you know, 50 to 70%. And so I'm still learning what my body can actually handle. But the hypertrophy work I'm doing now, it does feel good. I mean, it's, I've never really liked, you know, going to the gym and just doing bicep curls in front of the mirror. Like that never motivated me. I like what I can do with the fitness, and I don't care. Like people really love bodybuilding. It's like they love shaping their bodies and the physique and all that stuff. I get that now. I used to not understand that, but now I understand it. But now I'm starting to actually enjoy some of the hypertrophy work, whereas before I probably just had a judgment towards it. Oh, it's just ego. Guys just care about how they look or whatever. Like I understand it more now, and the health benefits of it are actually, you know, pretty substantial.
You know, I had 2022 nationals. That one was in Atlanta, and about 3 months out, I had a rotator cuff strain, and it's the first time I ever went to PT for anything. And essentially, all they did, I mean, it did a little dry needling and deep massage on my shoulder, but in terms of my training, he advised me to work with bands and very light weights and basically do bodybuilding work on my shoulder. And I showed up on nationals 3 months into doing some PT, and I felt normal. I tied my all-time PR on bench. Nice. And then I thought, man, I got to stop dogging these bodybuilders.
I know, right? I know. It's like, man, I got to stop talking shit in my head, because like these guys are doing better than I am right now.
Yeah.
But I just love the strength aspect of it, but I like the progress part of it. I like what I can do with my fitness, you know. It's like that's the stuff I really, really enjoy. And people find, it's like, whatever you find your enjoyment in, whatever activity you're doing, the main thing is you find enjoyment in it, you know, otherwise you're not going to continue doing it. I mean, that's it. That's the secret right there. It's pretty simple. But I was going to ask you, in terms of like a typical, well, let me ask you the typical question, people who don't know, where do you get your protein from? Right, on a plant-based diet. But really, seriously though, for you, like what is your main sources of protein?
If any of your listeners want to know hour per hour, it's all in my book, The Way of the Vegan Meathead. But in general, I advise it's good for all of us to get as many sources as we can. I'm not keen on one being necessarily better than the other. I think they all play a part in the big picture of our protein consumption. But you know, I do supplement with protein powders. So it's usually, I get about 60 grams of protein powder a day. That's usually two, like, I like to do, like I said, I like to do 30 grams per meal at least. So, if I make a smoothie with protein powder, I put 30 grams of protein powder in it. I'll probably put peanut butter for another 10 grams, and then either tofu, or I like that Ripple unsweetened vanilla. It's got about the same macros as tofu. So if you like a smoother smoothie, I use the Ripple, one serving of that, get about another 8, 9 grams. Or I throw in a quarter block of tofu and the water from the smoothie, and that all ends up being about 50 grams in a smoothie. I always say that's my second breakfast. And in accordance with the name Vegan Meathead, I'm big on plant-based meats, the faux meats. Granted, when I break it down, I don't eat them at every meal like people might think. But I would say usually my first meal of the day is Morningstar Farms chicken strips, about half a bag usually, or it's usually about two servings. So it's only about 280 calories, but you're getting about 45 grams of protein out of that. And I'll usually eat some vegetables with that, like broccoli, asparagus, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, and probably two servings of vegetables on that. So it gets me over 50 grams in that meal. So already we're at 100 grams by my second meal of the day. Usually before I work out, I'll have a protein bar, maybe a Cliff Builders bar for some carbs and some protein. Siggy's yogurt, it's another 10 grams. I like Nugo. You ever had these Nugo Slim bars? I've done a macros evaluation on a lot of protein sources, but among bars, they're probably one of the only ones that's about 30% protein per calorie. So 16 grams of protein for only about 180 calories. So that's pretty good. I like to eat those. I might eat two of those because that'll be like 32 grams of protein right there. And and before I go to the gym, I might have some like kiwis or some mandarin oranges and something like that. And then after the gym, I have another high protein, 40, 50 gram protein powder smoothie with maybe some more tropical type fruits, a little more simple carbohydrates like pineapple, mango, banana, and not as much fat. Like, I don't add peanut butter post workout. But you add all those up, we already are around 200. And so then if I have any other kind of snack or meal, that'll usually get me over 200 grams a day. But my point there is, I eat fake meats. I eat protein powder. I get the trace proteins from all the vegetables and the nuts and the nut butters and the tofu, and it's actually a pretty simple way to eat for me. And then if I ever go out to eat, I love Thai, I love Chinese, I love anywhere you get tofu, tempeh, things like that. Seitan, I love. So I do try to not on a regular basis, I try to not eat so many things with buns or bagels and all that. Those are special occasions because obviously I like those things. But if you've got weight class goals in mind, you got to keep track of condiments and buns, and that'll detract from the total amount of protein per calorie in your diet. So you got to choose your calories wisely if you got weight goals to keep in mind. But that's it. I mean, it's supplement a bit with protein powder, fake meats, and then the more like natural sources like tofu, tempeh, seitan. And then you've got all your trace sources that might be from nuts, beans, things that I would say are not primary protein sources. They do have protein in them. I make a big delineation about that in the book. It's like, these are fat sources, they're carb sources, and they have protein. That's fine. That still goes towards your protein goals, but they're not your primary sources. Because, with beans, if you've got as much fiber as you got protein, you risk not absorbing all that protein. So those are sides. things like that.
And there are like, yeah, and it's a good point. It's like nuts and seeds. People are like, oh, I'm getting lots of protein. It's like, no, you're getting lots of fat and a little bit of protein. They're very mm-hmm. healthy for you, but you don't need, yeah, you know, a tremendous amount of them in your diet. You know, you've got to be careful too. I mean, but then there are nuances. There's, you know, Mediterranean pine nuts actually are pretty high protein. They're not necessarily easy to come by. But for a nut, they're actually very high protein, which is one of the rare ones.
Okay.
But then, yeah, I mean, in terms of like just natural whole food ones, I mean, obviously tempeh, you know, tofu, those ones are good. Beans are good, but like you said, it's like they're a good source of protein, but they're definitely high carbohydrate. So if people are concerned about getting that higher protein number, you've just got to, you know, track for a week and see where you're at and then make some adjustments. Yep. I mean, I avoided tracking for the first 3 or 4 years. And I was like, I better track and see. And I was like, okay, you get some big,
you know, back in 2018, I did a national competition and I had one of the world's best powerlifting champions coaching me. He wasn't a vegan. And so he was really interested to see how I track, because that meet was a 2-hour weigh-in for USAPL. And I had to have everything on point, because a 2-hour weigh-in, you can't reload. I mean, you don't have a lot of time you can't be too depleted when you go into a weigh-in like that, you know. So I had everything on point, and that made me better at just being able to eyeball and estimate. So, you know, if I guess what I'm trying to say here is, if you have maybe put in a few months, half a year of tracking to get good at it, and then you know what your routines are. Because I don't track now, you know, I know generally what I'm getting and how much of everything is in my food. And I can even go out and probably be a little better at estimating what restaurants are doing. But
it took you a long time to get there of actually paying attention though, right?
You got to practice that, you know. And for people struggling to move the dial, whether up or down, with whatever their goals are, don't avoid tracking. I know people just don't like to do it, and it is a pain in the ass, but it's something that if you do it enough, you don't need to really do it anymore. If you start experiencing things going the way you want them to, and you just, you know, like for me, the way I eat is second nature. I don't really need to track much of anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, MyFitnessPal, awesome app, right? What I found is if you track for 2 or 3 weeks and you kind of build some meals and understand things, it's like you can, and you're kind of where you want to be. You don't really have to track after that. Now, if you want to bulk or you want to cut, you're going to have to track for a while, right? And again, you can do it for 2 or 3 weeks, kind of see that you're, and then check your weight every day and kind of see that you're on the right track. But it's not, I mean, unless you're an elite athlete at the top 0.01% who is in a professional sport, you know, trying to be your most optimal peak performance possible as an athlete and as a human being, you know, you really don't have to track every day forever. You just don't. I mean, you do have to track for a period of time. For me, it was a few weeks, and then it was like, okay, now I know what I'm eating. I can eyeball as well, you know. Yeah. And then when I went on a bulk, I was like, okay, I have to track again to make sure I'm doing things right. Okay, a few weeks was fine. Same thing, went on a cut, same thing, track for 2 or 3 weeks. And then, you know, it's pretty simple. If you do it 2 or 3 weeks, you get the hang of it.
I find that bulking is actually the easiest. And people think bulking for vegans is hard. It's the easiest. I mean, yeah, well, you know, I know what my maintenance calories are, right? Yeah. And I figured that out. And so now if I want to bulk, which I don't often do anymore because I know where my niche is and where I'm best and where I'm most competitive, which is where I am right now in terms of weight. But if I ever want to bulk, I just eat more cereal with soy milk. I just eat what I'm eating and then add cereal.
Just add a bowl, or two.
Cereal will make you gain weight.
That's true, man. It's true, especially at night. Like you want to get fat. Yeah. Like eat cereal at night before bed. And if you're fat, you don't want to be fat. You know, see how much food you're eating at night before bed. It's like best time to eat to bulk. Worst time to eat if you want to be lean and healthy long term.
Right.
Yeah. They're pretty simple, actually. What are your like kind of long-term goals with powerlifting, or you know, what are goals that you're working towards right now with powerlifting?
I'd say my goals are more immediate. I am doing nationals, which is going back to Las Vegas this year. Now I'm a Virginia resident, so I just want to get all the Virginia records that I can I apply for. So that's
Are you close to them? Are you above
them? I will clobber them once I get to that meet. Yeah, gotcha. I will clobber.
Nice.
And then you know, so I've got I've got a meet in April. It's an IPL. It's actually a Masters Cup, so you have to be 40 plus to be in it. But it's an international competition, so that'll be interesting. I've never done a meet that's all 40 plus. And then I've got nationals in June. Late June? No. Yeah, it's late June. Yeah. So that'll be my first one as a Virginia resident, and which I can probably claim some records there. And then, you know, I'm on the team, the Vegan Shrunk Plant Built team, and we got green lighted with more sponsorships to go back to Mr. America in New Jersey this October. And that one's going to be a new federation that I haven't competed in, but it's one that's getting kind of popular called WRPF, which I thought, you know, when I go with the team, we're just there to rep for the cause and show what vegans can do, because we've got a CrossFit team, we've got a powerlifting team, a bodybuilding team. Depending on what is being hosted at the festival, there might be an Olympic weightlifting team. We have a strongman team that did very well last year, which is really cool because all our strongmen are and women are drug-free. You have to be drug-free to be on our team. But, you know, strongman is not a drug-free sport. But we had the best – one of our dudes won first place among the big guys, and one of our women won first place among the open women. So that was really awesome. Wow. That drug-free vegans won the strongman.
That's like cool.
Across the board.
What's what's the team called? You said Vegan Green Belt?
Vegan Strong Plant Belt team. So
Vegan Strong Robert, Plant Belt.
Yeah. Robert Cheek, the author, former bodybuilder, a vegan bodybuilder, he started basically like an outreach organization called Vegan Strong. And then the Plant Built team, which has existed since I think about 2013, it's founded by Giacomo Marchese and Danny Taylor. They're a married couple, but they're both vegan bodybuilders and coaches. And they started it initially was just a vegan bodybuilding team to go out and compete together against against everybody, you know, and just demonstrate what vegans can do. By like 2014, 2015, they started expanding and having new teams like CrossFit and power lifting. And
that's cool.
By 2015 was my first meet I competed with them. And so the team was on hiatus for like 5 years. But when they came back in 2022, Robert, with his Vegan Strong brand and the Plant Built team, they merged. So now it's the Vegan Strong Plant Built team.
Gotcha.
And I think that was just like a business decision in terms of getting sponsorships and connections, because Robert's out there hustling all the time, and then there's already the existing Plant Built brand. So now we're the Vegan Strong Plant Built team. It was originally just called Plant Built, but
do you have a vegan protein supplement company sponsor you guys?
Yeah, our current sponsor is Plant Fusion.
Plant Fusion.
Yeah, they're based. They're also based out of New Jersey, but they're kind of one of the OG vegan supplement companies. And I think they've got. I was buying their stuff when I got into doing vegan athletic stuff, you know, more than a decade ago. It's cool that they're still around and still a successful company, and they're sponsoring us. It's really cool.
That's awesome. Are you guys? Do you have like an exclusive with them, or could you have another sponsor?
I mean, I see that members of our team have, some of us have individual sponsorships that I haven't seen anybody back away from those.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that there are members on the team in the past, especially specifically some of the bodybuilders who kind of outgrew the team, and they have specific sponsorships that would not let them also promote our sponsors.
The bodybuilders outgrew the team, no pun intended. That was a pretty good one.
Yeah. I've seen that happen.
The reason I ask is because we've got we're launching our supplement here in the next couple of months, and
oh, that's cool.
I'd love to talk with you guys about maybe doing
supporting. I mean, we've got other sponsors like Go Ultima, who's like a electrolytes brand.
Yep.
And Unisoy vegan jerky. Mm-hmm. So that's cool. We've got people, good companies backing us with the supplements and the protein options.
That's awesome.
So we signed on for another year to do that. So in October, we'll go to New Jersey. And so I'll just claim some state records in that federation that's running the meet at that festival.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my thing is, I got, like I said, my biggest regret is not being a jock in high school. since I started powerlifting at 32, it's not really in the cards for me to have many chances at national or world records. But state records, almost every state I look at, then Texas or Virginia, it's like I've got a good shot at getting all of those in most federations, most of them. I think a lot of guys who get to be my age, they either just gain too much weight to stay competitive at 165, or they get older and they get on hormone therapy, and so therefore they can't be tested in drug tested leagues anymore. But the interesting thing in Texas is like my squat state record is the same as the guy who's on the non-tested
that's records. Crazy.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, it's supposed to give you 10% on a best case scenario, 10% advantage to be on roids, but
that's the plants for you, man. Plants are like roids, you know.
Yeah,
plants are better than roids.
Yeah, no, I love doing what I do with the Vegan Meathead Enterprise. I've got with the book. The book just kind of continues to sell itself. People keep finding it, and it just does not appear to me that there's other books that are as aggressively vegan and over the top about the protein. And, it's written in gym speak, it's very, it's meant to be kind of a comedy endeavor also.
and that's, where can people get the book?
The main place people buy is on Amazon. So The Way of the Vegan Meathead, Eating for Strength by Daniel Austin. You can order directly from me. I always, whatever companies I'm working with, I include coupons and I throw in stickers and, extra perks for ordering direct from me. But of course you're not going to get the free shipping like you do on Amazon. But that's daniel-austin.com or veganmeathead.com. Those are my two websites. Always happy to do direct orders, but I have no qualms with people who want to order off Amazon. I mean, that's where the world buys most of their books at this point anyway. So it's cool. People find it pretty easily on there, I guess, because I've been surprised. I put the first edition out in 2018, and then in 2022, I put out the second edition, and that's gone even better than the first edition. So I'm working on the audiobook right now, which I'll have out later this year. And the cool thing about it is it's brought me a lot of opportunities to go around speaking at like veg fests and just all kinds of random colleges will invite me to speak either online or even sometimes at the college. Just last month, I gave a lecture for the city of San Antonio's employees. Somebody in San Antonio who's like a fan of what I do told their HR department, hey, you got to book this guy for one of those New Year resolution lectures. So I gave a talk about how to make veganism work in the new year for hundreds of city of San Antonio employees. And that's a lecture they recorded and it'll be in their database as a resource for their employees forever. Things like that are just like, I never saw this happening by being a vegan who wanted to lift weights and eat a lot of protein. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm just going to keep, I'm just going to keep lifting, keep trying to claim records and win competitions. I like to compete in more like high profile meets like nationals and things. So, I only do about usually two meets a year. It's what my body can handle best. One would be even better for my body at this point, but I'm doing three this year, so I got to be smart on the programming, like we were talking about earlier. But I just plan to keep lifting, keep winning, keep writing, keep promoting, keep talking about it.
You know what I like about your story? Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you have to love what you do, right? Otherwise, you won't be sustainable in it. And what I love about your story is, like, you know, you were vegan first for a long time. I mean, from 2005, and then you didn't even start lifting until I think 2015, right?
I didn't start competing.
You didn't start competing until 2015. When did you start lifting?
I would say I got serious about lifting in 2011.
Okay. So you're already vegan for 6 years, and then you've built, because there's an excuse that some people have. It's like, oh yeah, well, they built all their strength on an omnivore diet, and then they switched to vegan, so they had all those gains. And it's like, it's a nonsensical excuse, because if you switched and then for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years you continued to maintain or get stronger, you know, basic logic says, well, if you believe that that diet is worse for strength and for competition and for athletes, then you would decline. But most of these athletes that have switched don't decline. In fact, they actually maintain or get better. But it's just, you know, I mean, you're an example of others as well, but your example is great. I think just to show people the reality is, like, no, you can do this long term. Same thing. I was vegan for however many years, you know, 6 or 7 years before I started lifting as well. So I had no strength when I started lifting. I had nothing. You know, now I'm the strongest I've ever been in my entire life. Obviously, I keep getting stronger year after year. So it's totally.
Yeah, I went vegan strictly for an ethical reason. Just I didn't want to support paying people to kill animals or take their babies away from them and use their bodies for milk and then slaughter the babies. You know, like, I just didn't want to pay people to do that.
Yeah.
And I had no idea about nutrition at all. And like I said, I got a little skinny fat that first year I was vegan. But so like 2011, I started trying to train kind of like a quasi bodybuilder. You know, I had Robert Cheek's book and I thought, I'm going to try to do this. But I found out I wasn't really genetically cut out to be a bodybuilder. I just didn't feel like it was going to be what I was good at. And a friend recommended a 5x5 powerlifting program, and that caused more transformation in my body than doing higher rep, lower weight work, you know? And that's when I fell in love with powerlifting. But I became a certified personal trainer in 2012, and I worked in a gym for about a year, and I actually didn't enjoy that. I like having
a lot of
access
patience.
To this. What I like doing now is on the side, when people approach me for coaching, and if I find out they're serious enough and they're ambitious enough and they're going to eat right, and, you know, I'll take on maybe 2-3 clients at a time, because I, you know, I have a lot of, that's not my main thing I'm out trying to be good at. But I love to help the vegans make the gains, you know, and when I find the right person with the right attitude that wants to work with me, I think, yeah, let's do this, you know. But I think at that time I was still kind of, I didn't know about powerlifting as an official sport. I had done that program, the 5x5 program, and it kind of gave me bodybuilding results, because, you know, reps of five is still,
it's right there.
It's
right
in between hypertrophy and strength, you know. So my strength did go up, but I didn't know any other kind of program. I didn't know anything about programming. I had the background of the education to be a personal trainer, and I just kind of knew general fitness stuff, and that's how I trained people. And it wasn't until 2014 that I realized, oh, you can compete in powerlifting, because I saw what the Plant Built team was doing, and I was like, oh, I want to be on that team. So I got serious about I picked a weight class, and I started experimenting with my diet to get the protein up, to even like come down off the carbs. And I actually lost weight, because I had been bulking so hard. I was like weighing 186 pounds. And I thought, well, if I'm going to be like a 181 or a 198 weight class, my numbers weren't competitive. So I went down to 165. And back to what you're saying, about my progress after being vegan for many years. And so, yeah, by the time I stepped into my first competition, I'd been vegan for 10 years. And I'd been training specifically as a powerlifter for maybe close to a year before that. That first meet, I put up a total of like 10:45. It wasn't amazing. I got my numbers on the board. I had fun. I met a lot of great people. I met the Plantville team, and it really motivated me. But, you know, now I'm more in like the 1260 to 1300 range at the same body weight, you know? So that's like a 30% improvement on my total.
Yeah.
At the same body weight.
Natural. That's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I fought hard for that over
yeah.
the years.
No, but, it's hard work, man. People don't really, yeah. people, you only know how hard work it is to add 5 pounds to a lift, you know. It's like once you're what they might call an advanced lifter, just meaning that you're way past those newbie gains, you know, to add 5 or 10 pounds to a PR, it's like it's hours of hard work, hours, hundreds of hours oftentimes.
At this point, it's
a lot for sure.
At this point, being 41, if I improve my total by like 10 pounds a year, I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Whereas years ago, I would see per year improvements of 50, 60, 80 pounds a year, you know, at a competition. So you get diminishing returns over time, but I mean, I love being as strong as I can be. So you just keep, it's like Sisyphus.
Yeah.
Pushing that boulder up the hill.
That's right. My uncle is 62, I think, 63. He competed in powerlifting in his 40s. He took 13, but he lifted his whole life. You know, he took 13 years off from lifting. So imagine this, mm-hmm. right? And he had some pretty big numbers. Smaller guy in terms of weight class, probably similar weight class to you. He was incredibly strong, though. And, you know, back then, I'm not sure if he was even natural. I don't know. 13 mm-hmm. years off of lifting, comes back in his 60s, starts lifting again. He's already almost pushing 500 on his deadlift.
In his 60s.
Yeah. He was at my house the other day. I think he pulled 475. I'm barely just in front of him. You know, it's like I'm almost 37. It's like I just pulled 500 the other day. You know, I just started lifting six years ago. And here he is, like, you know, early 60s, hasn't lifted in 13 years, comes back. He's been lifting for maybe a year or two. And boom, he's already almost at 500. I'm like, dude, it's amazing how much the body can hold on to those adaptations or reclaim those adaptations once you start.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it makes me think I need to take some years off. one of my teammates, Nick Squires, who's a really amazing vegan powerlifter, he tore his bicep playing hockey last year, and he thought he wasn't going to be able to show up for the team. But he got reattachment surgery, and then Ryan, our team captain, coached him how to train around that injury, you know, and so it could fully heal. He showed up on meet day, and I mean, everything went up because he trained in different ways. He basically took like 4 to 6 months off, but it ended up being a net positive because he, like all of us, we all want to go heavy all the time, but he needed the variation. He needed to find ways to back off. And it was a blessing in disguise. Like you tear your bicep off, you think, oh, I'm done. I'm done for years. I might not even be able to come back. He came back in 6 months better.
Wow.
Because he, for many of those months, he couldn't even have a bar on his back because he couldn't, you know, pin his arms back to hold a bar. So he had to find other ways to do, like, you know, belt squats and, right. SSB squats and all that variation, just and doing lighter weight for a while, just allowed his central nervous system to recover. And man, he was so fresh that day in New Jersey at Mr. America. We were just like, damn, I thought I need to get injured.
It's crazy how you, it's like sometimes the body just needs a little break, you know, and that's what I'm doing right now through this. I'm finding the blessings in disguise, right? It's like, I'm finding the silver lining in these injuries. Yeah. And it's like, you know, I'm being able to attend most of my daughter's basketball games. You know, I'm spending more time in the sauna, more time focusing on sleep, more time meditating, more time, you know, relaxing. Like, it's just because I've trained in so hard, so much volume, and everything goes to the wayside. And here I'm like, okay, you know, this is a blessing in disguise. It's like, I'm getting this much needed physical break that I just haven't given myself in, you know, 6 years. And
I will say the last time I experienced a significant jump in my gains was 2020 when the gym shut down. And I was at home doing pull-ups and push-ups and just body weight stuff. And I even got to a point, because that stuff just doesn't stimulate me enough.
Yeah.
I just crave the heavier weight. I stopped doing it for a number of weeks and just watched the entirety of Game of Thrones and ate ice cream. And like, when I got back in the gym, it was rough for about a month and a half, just reacclimating, because I probably lost like 10% of my max strength. But I went to Nationals that year, clobbered my old numbers. Just, it was the time off.
Well, there you go, dude. So you don't need to get injured. You just need to take a month and just eat ice cream.
You need a pandemic. You need a pandemic or something.
No,
you just,
no, no more pandemics.
Stay away from the gym.
No more pandemics. I'm tired of that shit. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you never know. You can always work it to your advantage.
It's true. It's true. You find the blessing in disguise, you know, and I think that's a big part of it too. As an athlete, it's just, and learning to listen to the body and learn to pay attention and learning to train smarter. And it's, you know, yeah, you're in your early 20s, you can kind of just tear through stuff and it's not going to affect you very much. But as you continue to age, all that stuff becomes even so much more important.
Right.
Awesome, dude. Well, so the book is Vegan Meathead. People can go grab that online, anywhere at the website or on Amazon. And Plant Built Team sounds amazing, man. I'm going to check it out. I'll talk with you more about, you know, maybe some sponsorship stuff. We're looking for some athletes to collaborate with the company I'm launching right now is called Plant Powered Athlete. And it's all about, you know, helping inspire and educate and support people achieve their optimal performance on a plant-based diet. And so, you know, we're working on some really high quality, organic, plant-based supplements. We're coming out with the protein powder to start, and then we'll eventually have some others to support that. And in a clothing line, and then just education, just getting information out, encouraging people, you know, to strategically add more plant-based nutrition to their diet. Even if they don't go 100% vegan or vegetarian, it's like just adding more plants to your diet, you know, is going to help you. It's going to help the animals, is going to help the planet, and how to do it. And if you want to go 100% plant-based, then we'll show you how as well. But we just want to, you know, continue to.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, that when we did the Mr. America Festival last year, the Plant Built team, we had basically the organizer of the meet was just like, hey, man, you guys aren't just like good for vegans. You guys are good. And then there was this one older dude, I think he was like a firefighter or something. He came up, he had competed, but he goes, man, I was just, I heard you guys talking about tofu and all this, and I've always just been scared of that stuff, but man, maybe there's something to it. You know, I was like, yeah, don't be scared of tofu. It's cool to see like old stubborn meathead men say, you know, like, we know if we can get through to those people, we can get through to anybody. Yeah. You know, we just got to demonstrate.
And my dad's a testament. He grew up in old, you know, powerlifting days, meathead, whole thing, you know, dozen raw eggs every day, you know, steak, lots of beef every day, whole thing. And now, you know, he's in his 70s and he's healthier than he's been in 20 plus years because he's on a primarily plant-based diet. He does a little bit of chicken and fish once in a while, a little bit of raw eggs once in a while, but he's mostly doing smoothies every day, you know, fresh veggies, fruit, tofu. And it's his heart, his blood pressure was through the roof. And his, what else did he have? He had two or three things going on. And one of them was high blood pressure. I can't remember what the other ones were. got him on a, you know, I'd call it like a plant strong diet, you know, or plant based mm-hmm. diet. And he started working out again. And within weeks, his blood pressure came down and his markers got significantly better. And now it's like he's healthier than he's been in decades. And it's really cool to see.
Yeah. Nice. Better late than never.
Right. Awesome, man. Well, hey, it was great meeting with you. Great chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise. And,
you know, keep crushing it, man. Good luck with your upcoming meets.
Thank you. I will.
All right. Take care.
Take care, man.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to NathanCrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. It's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort. It cares about evolution. Mm. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.